morning. This morning's scripture is taken from the book of Luke, chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. And it's the story of the crooked manager. Jesus said to his disciples, "There was once a rich man who had a manager. He got reports that the manager had been taking advantage of the position by running up huge personal expenses. So he called him in and said, 'What's this I hear about you? You're fired, and I want a complete audit of your books.' The manager said to himself, 'What am I going to do? I've lost my job as manager. I'm not strong enough for a laboring job, and I'm too proud to beg. Oh, I've got a plan. Here's what I'll do. Then when I'm turned out into the street, people will take me into their houses.' Then he went at it. One after another, he called in the people who were in debt to his master. And he said to the first, 'How much do you owe the manager?' Or my master, I'm sorry. He replied, 100 jugs of olive oil. The manager said, 'Here, take your bill, sit down here, quick now, write 50. To the next he said, "And you, what do you owe?" He answered, 100 sacks of wheat. And he said, "Take your bill and write in 80. Now here's a surprise. The master praised the crooked manager. And why? Because he knew how to look after himself. Streetwise people are smarter in this regard than law-abiding citizens. They are on constant alert, looking for angles, surviving by their wits. I want you to be smart in that same way, and for what is right, using every adversary to stimulate you to creative survival, to concentrate your attention on the bare essentials so you'll live, really live, and not complacently just get by on good behavior. God sees behind appearances. Jesus went on to make these comments: if you're honest in small things, you'll be honest in big things. If you're a crook in small things, you'll be a crook in big things. If you're not honest in small jobs, who will put you in charge of the store? No worker can serve two bosses. He'll either hate the first and love the second, or adore the first and despise the second. You can't serve both God and the bank." This is the word of the Lord.
May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts together be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. When I'm talking to somebody and I have no idea what they just said, I mean, I heard it, or I think I heard it right, but it just seems so bizarre, or it just seems so completely wrong, or so completely weird, instead of saying, "Have you lost your mind?" or instead of jumping right back with, "That's absolutely ridiculous," I've learned to do this. I take a breath, and I say, "Can you say that another way?" And now my boss, she's onto it. So whenever she says something like that and I say, "Sharon, can you say that another way?" she just starts laughing because she's like, "You think it's absolutely ridiculous, don't you?" But today, Claire, I don't know how many times I have heard this parable read. I don't know how many times I read it this week. But every time I read this parable, I'm just thinking, "Jesus, can you say that another way?" Because this is, I say that it is the weirdest story ever told by Jesus anyway. And it's been puzzling people since he told the tale. One commentator, because I really dipped into the historians and the commentators for this one, and nobody has a clue, really, you know. But one commentator said there are as many interpretations as there are readers. I mean, think about it. You've gone to a church, we don't have stained glass pictures of the different parables, but if you've gone to churches with stained glass, and you might see a stained glass depiction of a sower sowing seeds, or the prodigal son being welcomed home by his dad. But have you ever seen a stained glass picture of this? Two crooked guys? Like, it doesn't happen. Because when Jesus tells a story, usually we can figure out what he's saying. This story doesn't seem to have a clear good guy or a clear bad guy. Take the Good Samaritan. We know who the good guy is there. Take the prodigal son, which actually comes right before. Jesus told the story right before this one. Unfortunately, the lectionary skipped that, so I would much rather give a sermon on the prodigal son. But we know who the good guy is in the story of the prodigal son. The good guy is the father who takes back the younger brother who squanders the inheritance. We could say he's the bad guy. And we know how to compare. We can say, well, God in the prodigal son, he's like the father who is always waiting for us to return with a love that won't let us go. And then there are parables of the lost coin and the lost sheep. Again, Jesus just told those, but the lectionary skipped over it. Thanks. And we know kind of what they mean. Jesus even says, you know, when that lost coin is found, the widow might have had many other coins, but she looked and she looked, and when she found that lost coin, she rejoiced. And the shepherd, all of his flock's there, but when he finds that one that's missing, and we can take that and we can say, God rejoices when one lost soul is found. Every one matters to God. But what's the deal with this? I mean, here we have a wealthy landowner, and the way that the system worked back then, it was absolutely corrupt. So this landowner, the people who worked for him, the peasants and the farmers on his land, they did all of this work. They were like indentured service. They used to own that land. But he took it away from them. The system took it away from them and said, oh, don't worry, I'll pay your taxes. You just have to work on the land and then give me a portion of what you harvest. But the portion was always an exorbitant amount, and that's why the farmers never could get any further. So you have this wealthy landowner who hires a middle manager. The middle manager is the guy who goes out and does the collecting from the poor peasant farmers. And the wealthy landowner discovers that his manager, his middle guy, has been cooking the books. And so he calls the manager to him and he says, you're done, you've been cheating me, I need an audit of your records, you're gone. And the manager, freaking out, knowing he's too old to do manual labor, knowing he doesn't want to beg, and he's going to need some friends when all his money runs out and he has nowhere to turn, he doesn't have any friends right now. And so he pulls a sneaky trick on the landowner, his boss. He goes to all the people who owe him parts of their labor, and he says, hey, how much do you owe? How much do you owe my boss? Okay, 100? All right, here, quickly, make it 50. And so he looks great, and he's made a new friend. And he goes to another, and he says, how much do you owe? 80 quarts of olive oil. Oh, okay, great. Here, quickly, write down that now you only owe 50. And again, he has made a friend. And he's actually made his boss look pretty good because he doesn't say, I'm doing this on the sly. Although you have to wonder why. They're probably wondering, like, quickly, write it down, quickly. But now he's made all of these friends. And the wealthy landowner might make less money, And so you expect when the wealthy landowner finds out what this middle guy, his former employee, has just done, he's going to be very angry. But no! When the landowner finds out what the manager did, he praises the manager for being so crafty and cunning. He says, "Wow, you are devious. I like that in a guy." So if we stop right there, how do we figure out who's who in this parable? Is God the wealthy landowner, Jesus, praising the manager for shrewdness? Does God want us to be sneaky? But nah, that can't be it, because then Jesus goes on and he gives warnings, and he says, if you can't be honest about little things, you're not going to be honest about big things. And he says something that I don't think any pastor would ever have the nerve to say, but Jesus says it. Jesus says, you can't make money and God your boss. You'll end up loving one and hating another. So if you love money, you hate God. Jesus said that. And now we can see why Jesus was not a popular figure among the rich and powerful. So Jesus, are you saying that we should hate money? Because Jesus, we need money to care for ourselves, for our family and others. That's just how the system works. But Jesus doesn't say we need to hate money. It's just that we should not serve it. Because money, material goods, should not be the most important thing. I don't know if any of you remember the name of Bishop Fulton Sheen. I remember my grandma really, really liked him. And he said about this parable, he said, what it tells us is that you must remember to love people and use things rather than love things and use people. And looking back at this strange story, maybe that helps us make sense. Because the shrewd manager, he used money to show love for people? No. Because we're privy to his thoughts. He says, I'm going to cut their bills. I'm going to make their friends so they'll take care of me. So the shrewd manager hasn't become a paragon of virtue. He hasn't turned himself around. But yet, we can use our imagination, since the text really isn't clear. We don't know all the thoughts of the manager. Maybe the manager was tired indeed of the corrupt system in which he lived and worked. Maybe he was pulling a Robin Hood here, taking from the rich, his old boss, and giving to the poor. Maybe the part that he cut was just his commission. Maybe what this manager was doing is what we might call a whistleblower today, doing his own little part to put a stop to an unjust system in the first place. Is the parable Jesus telling us, is it saying that sometimes we have to break the rules that aren't fair to benefit other people? One of the commentators suggested that we ask our congregation, we ask ourselves, have you ever broken a rule or even a law to help somebody else? And first I thought, phew, that's good, that's easy, I could ask myself that. Because all I've done is kind of bend rules. I've never broken a law. Bending a rule is different from breaking a law, right? Probably not. I have broken a law to help someone else. I didn't know that I was doing it, if that helps. I thought I was just bending the rules. A few months before my mother died, while she was dying, you know, she was at the doctor's all the time. And they were poking and prodding. She was just exhausted. The drawing of the blood, the scans. But what she hated most of all was having to give a urine sample. She hated that. All the pressure, and she couldn't give the med techs what they needed. She did all the tips that they say, run some water, try to relax. And one time, my mom was having a bad day even before we got to the doctor. And she was in a long time in the restroom, and so I went in. And my mom was just sitting there crying and shaking her head with such exhaustion and resignation. And she said, "Inge, I can't do this. I just want to get out of here and go to lunch." So I had an idea. I bent the rules. I provided the sample, and no one was the wiser. And we were out of there. Now, later when I told my aunt, she said, "You know, you just committed Medicare fraud." And I guess I did, but I hope the statute of limitations is up by now. That was almost 10 years ago. No, almost 6 years ago. So, and I've confessed my sin to God, and now I've shared it with you. Yeah, I broke a law to help somebody else. And it didn't make me a hero that day, except maybe to my mommy. But then I thought of others who have broken the law, who we can say have become heroic. You think about Gandhi and King and Mandela and Susan B. Anthony and those brave souls who hid Jewish friends and strangers during the Nazi terror. They did more than bend the rules. They broke the law. And what of Jesus himself? The man, Jesus of Nazareth, remember he was a man and had to abide by the laws that everyone had to. He broke so many laws and eventually he was executed as a criminal against the government. Because just because something is a law doesn't mean it's ethical. And just because something is the law doesn't mean it's godly. Is that what Jesus is saying here? Is this related to what Matthew wrote when he said that Jesus said, "I'm sending you out like sheep among the wolves. Therefore be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves"? It is a lot to think about. I don't have the answer, because again, then Jesus says, be honest in both small and large things. And actually, some scholars think that that was just added on to make Jesus' story a little easier to swallow, because this parable sounds, well, again, you're not going to probably teach it in Sunday school to a little child. But perhaps the most important and the only certain takeaway we can take from this story of Jesus can be applied to how we make our choices and what should take precedence when we decide what to do. Serve God, not money. Love God, not money. Love people, use money. Use money to love people. That's one way of showing our love for God. That's how we demonstrate that God is the one we serve, not anyone or anything else. Now, I know that not a lot of us have money to spare, but we have much to give. We have many resources, and money might be one of those. But we also do have our prayers that can be shared for others in the world. We have words. I use so many words. And words are things too. But we can think carefully about our words and use them as the gifts they can be. Gifts for hope and healing. We also have time. And there are ways to use our time in new ways to bring that healing and hope. These things, money and words and time, use those things to deepen our relationships and show our love for one another. And so now we come to why there's a little blank card, a little homework in your bulletin. Because I'd like all of us to think of one person or one relationship you would like to deepen, and to put that person's name on the card along with today's date and the Sunday 1 month from now, which is October 19th. And you're not gonna turn them in, you're not gonna show anybody or anything. This isn't a challenge, nobody's gonna judge what we put on the card, no one's gonna know the results of the outcomes. But think of ways that you might be able to use your resources, whatever they are, your energy, your time, your gifts in technology or music or craft, to deepen that relationship with that person you put on the card. And I have to add this, because somebody told me this a long time ago. We are always taught that we are to give. That seems to be part and parcel of what it means to be a Christian. And I was talking with someone who told me that when she was coming up in the church, they told her that joy means the order of how you should care for things and people, your order to make your decisions. Jesus first, others second, and yourself last. And that caused a lot of grief in this woman's life, because she was always putting herself last. And frankly, in her life circumstances, there wasn't anyone who was putting her first. And that's not what God has in mind for her or for any of you. And there is nothing at all wrong with putting your own name on that card. If you feel like, I have been burning the candle at all the ends, I have been giving and giving, and I need God to fill me up. And so you can put someone else's name, or please do not be hesitant about putting your own. Because Jesus, maybe this parable is just a suggestion about how we might use the call we have as human beings, as children of God, to use our wealth, whatever form that is, for others, until we all have what we need. Amen.